let me just say for my audience here that you have spoken a little bit about times when you were asked to leave the company of the guru, and that is probably, to me, the only time that you, if you will, argued or resisted or confronted Adida in any kind of, let's say, hurtful. Well, you were hurt, but you were more angry.
I was like a cat in the corner. A rat in the corner.
But you were, are you speaking when you were telling those Ilas the other day with Rachel and Stanley that are those are the incidences that you're referring
to? Yeah, they're the same incidences. We actually talked about all the same incidences. I think there are three or four of them that are kind of more major, or five or six, I don't know how many, but, you know, that were major where I would fall into this place. But I guess the difference in telling you the story and telling Stanley and Rachel is that when I was speaking with you, we would pretty much just focus most of the time on one incident, one time period.
Right.
And you know, we may have also mentioned and remembered another one that was similar, and therefore we could weave that into the story.
Right.
With Stanley and Rachel, it seems like I was able to hit on all of them almost. From the beginning to the end, and they literally were telling the exact same story, even though they were years apart, decades apart in some case. And it showed an even more kind of like a comprehensive purification. That it to me, it showed the guru, his work, and the devotee, as I have mentioned to you, always re-examines and re-inspects all the stages of life all over again. Every time they seem to have understood something and matured in a certain way, and then it all starts again.
So on these other incidences that you didn't mention with me because of the focus of the dialogue, were they all surrounding times and the situations? Were they similar in the sense that you were asked to leave his company?
Either asked to leave or being given some kind of critical communication, which I responded to by removing myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there. I can tell you. Give you one an example of how this lesson was literally. From the beginning to literally the last time I actually spent time in Beloved's physical human presence, and the exact same thing. You know, you would think, okay, after 40 years, right, that, you know, someone matures and therefore has transcended some of their earlier stuff. And you know, and if you look at the history of this devotee, you know, you see different, you do actually see different levels of practice and different levels of maturity and self-understanding. And yet, if there still is something that's not fully inspected, it is going to rear its ugly head, regardless of what you've gone through or you think you've understood or how profound and spiritual you may assume yourself to be, regardless of the years and the gifts. So I was able to feel this particular description of the process that Beloved has always revealed to us, even in the midst of his, you know, incredible, magnificent seven stages of life, and allowing us to even receive and feel and animate the highest stages of life.
And so what was the incident that you said was, again,
okay,
another...
Well, I think I believe that I told you this story already.
Yeah, I believe you did, but just refresh
and that
me.
Was when Isabel and I were asked to leave Naitumba, and
no, but you were saying even to the last time you saw him, you were referring to that incident, and you were demonstrating this sense of betrayal, or
well, yeah, that, I mean, yeah, it occurred again, of course.
And what was that incident?
Well, that was when Beloved was in 2003 at Kauai, where Paul and I were living. And he had come there to see Devil
Keys. Oh, you were not renunciates, and he asked you to leave the LRO or whatever the classification was, that you were not in that...
Right.
I
wasn't in the Samraja, which were the people who were responsible for serving Beloved. But he did allow us to serve anyway, very personally, because we went, you know, with him every day on every outing, right, and attended him. And then one moment, you know, which I told you already, he said, why are Paul and Stefan, you know, serving me so intimately, they're not
right,
even part of the Samraja.
Right.
And in that moment, when I heard that, instead of responding like a devotee, I immediately fell into this very familiar place of feeling rejected, betrayed, abandoned, and unworthy. As if I had never heard anything, any wisdom about that, never learned a lesson about it ever in my life. And it all was dramatized once again.
Right.
And that was the last time I saw Beloved. And the reason why I was trying to make such a big deal about that is because that was always the perfect way Beloved served me.
Right.
In his response to this particular style and form of dramatization. When I would go to that place and therefore separate myself on, you know, presuming I was the victim of separation, not seeing I was the actual doer of separation, and then the way he would respond to that was, for me personally, was very different than all the other intimates who served him over the years. And for me, it was silence.
Mm-hmm.
There was no communication.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like he gave me all the rope possible of the sense of abandonment, betrayal, rejection, and all the rest, so that it could be reflected back to me. And the best way for him to reflect that to me was to not even engage. so I could just sit with it. And, you know, that's a big kind of a dramatization.
Well, yeah,
you know,
it's what I came
with in the beginning, and it's what I displayed at the end. You know, and you see, that's what I was trying to explain to Stanley and Rachel, was, you know, this other side of the refusal, how the ego can refuse. And so I can't help but tell the truth, because that I'm trying to tell the story of what happened. So even though there were these marvelous other times, there was also these specific times, the core.
Well, that's exactly right. You have the core.
Where you hold your fist instead of the open hand. And that was me doing it once again, 40 years later, as if I haven't learned shit. And as if the guru hadn't served me in this area, you know, countless times.
Right.
So
right.
It was, therefore, appropriate and useful. And now that I can speak about it, you know, without trying to have a judgment one way or the other, or try to look good or, you know, look bad, just tell it like it is, I can actually now understand what was going on, what I was doing and what he was doing.
Right.
And it does, of course, only make me appreciate even more what the gifts that I was receiving, even though some of the gifts were very, very unattractive in my interpretation or sense or feeling about it. But that's why I was saying the guru is so fucking perfect. He, you know, because it's not the way he responded to another devotee who may be going through stuff or dealing with their own shit. But for me, it was just this literally non-communication, as if I had never lived with him and served him. But he was actually reflecting my activity back to me.
And so if I were to ask you to make this into a lila, other than a story of rejection and betrayal and your failure, what would you see it that you could learn something from it? How do you interpret that? How would you glean something from that?
I'm not quite sure how to respond to you.
Okay, maybe if I could rephrase it.
I think you have to ask me a simpler question. In other words, I could probably answer your question, but it's causing too much mind to try to figure, you know, the words out and all that.
I mean, you're using mind to describe what you're feeling, right? So I'm just
not
asking.
Much. Ed, I thought you knew me better than that.
Well, I'm trying to goad you. I'm goading you. Because I have my own reading on this. And I don't want to tell you what my reading is. I'm trying to.
Yeah, you might reveal something about yourself, Ed.
Well, I mean, if you're baiting me, I'll go for it.
Hey, yeah, maybe I'll be the interviewer, and now I'd like to hear you explain more about yourself, Ed. for the listener.
For the listener, right. All right. Let me see. Okay. I will.
Don't forget that whenever we try to find an answer to something in front of Beloved, he always made it very clear that the person who was presenting themselves in that moment. They were the question.
Yeah.
Not the content of whatever you presume necessarily that you're going to speak about,
right.
But it was actually the person was being the question.
Yeah, you
and
are
so
the
could,
question. You are the question.
Yeah, so
you're,
he could just look at your forehead and see it all, see
right.
the, you know, the animation.
So for me, and I understand that, but what that does for me, it shuts me up. Because
go ahead.
Because I can go back, and I want to go back to the time when he would engage people in these questions. He wouldn't just give a blanket thing that you are the question, and so, you know.
Oh, no, yeah. No, he would. Of course he would. And
yeah.
He did.
So I want to do it in that vein, because I hear you saying, when you're describing these incidences of rejection, betrayal, and failure, right? And
yeah,
not...
conviction. I was convicted. I convicted myself of the ego point of view. Exactly.
Correct. And at any moment in that conviction, you have an opportunity. And
exactly.
You...
That
right.
was why I wanted to remind you of the other story of when I got Isabel and I were asked to leave the island, and I was wailing like a baby.
Right, right, right.
But did I tell you the part when we came back a few months later, and we were at a gathering with Beloved, and he looked at me and said, "You didn't have to leave."
Right.
And I didn't quite know what he meant, but just the fact that he was speaking to me and I was back in his physical company, I was very emotional. So I started to cry a lot.
Yeah.
And he let that go for a while, but then he would repeat it again. A little bit later,
mm-hmm.
Stefan, you didn't have to leave.
Right.
And I don't know why he was saying this, and I didn't understand, but I was just sinking into this emotional feeling. And I think he may have, not in any kind of harsh way, but just even said, okay, enough of the crying. And... you know, I don't know if you said it that way, but there's something, there is some memory of, you know, being suggested that I just, you know, listen up here and stop sinking into this emotional catharsis. And then he said, after a while of this going on, he said, you could have stood up. You could have stomped your feet, jumped up and down, yelled and screamed. In other words, I just assumed that I was the victim, and
right.
therefore I had no choice.
Right.
And he was showing me, I know it sounds so simple, but you have to understand, this is like a life changer for me.
Right.
Because of the pattern that I had and the tendencies that I had and the so-called, and this is in quotes, justification that I had to be a victim. And so he showed me that there was another option. And now, did I get it? Well, yeah, do you get it? You heard the words just now yourself. So when does the ego actually get it? Like,
well,
really understand it, and such that they now no longer have to make that wrong choice. So in some sense, I'm confessing that it happened again and again and again and again, and I forgot that lesson and that demonstration, you know, only until now when I'm talking to you and I'm talking to Stanley and Rachel, like, oh yeah, boy, he really did try to help you see that, you know, you could do something else rather than close the fist. But you don't get it till you get it.
Say again?
You don't get it till you get it. So whatever,
right.
You know, that's why he would say in most cases it would take many lifetimes.
And what is it that he's referring to? And I hate to bring the teaching in here because I know you're not a Dharma guy, and I don't want to seem like a quick answer man either. But there is a fundamental element in his teaching that addresses this fundamental. And what you're referring to is a very deep psychic. I mean, you have lots of evidence and you have lots of, you know, justification, if you will, in the egoic sense to justify.
So did everybody else.
Well, yeah, but I don't want to minimize the direct question to you.
Well, here's the thing is, Ed, you have to remember Beloved's very first talk to the public. I believe it was titled Understanding.
Correct.
His very first conversation. And he describes this particular thing right from the get-go. And he uses the analogy of the closed fist and the open hand.
Right.
And he says that literally, it's like he puts this blessing work or, you know, whatever it is that he's trying to help people, you know, understand about this false presumption of separate self-sense. And he describes the entire thing better than I could ever tell you, right there in the first, very first talk. All I'm doing now is seeing how that was revealed over and over and over and over and over again in my case. And
but
when the fist is...
He repeated that same talk for 45 years.
Well, how he repeated it, though, is different than how he... when, you know, in the early years, because
yes, but
later,
he's always talking about the same fundamental dilemma and the crisis and the revelation.
Well, I wouldn't actually say that. I would say that, you know, in Beloved's later years, he just more demonstrated the open hand divine truth of
who he
reality.
Was, not who you were.
No, actually, how there is only light, there's only consciousness. He would demonstrate that. And if we still wanted to carry on presuming otherwise, you know, he wasn't interested.
And why until the end that he said nobody got it?
Hello? That's what I'm trying to say. Because we didn't.
And the
Look
reason...
at humanity right now. Look at the entire world. You know,
well,
the tendency is to stick to the pattern of the self-contraction. And especially in this, you know, red realm.
Right. But he has a specific name for a fundamental crisis that is only the beginning. That has to go through. It is only the beginning of the true process.
Well, he often told us, he said, I'm talking to you now in the room here, but it's only because you're here. It's not because you're necessarily going to get anything. This could be for someone else long time later. You know, anybody's going to get it or hear it or feel it. Or receive it. You know what I mean? You don't really know. what his, the communication of the divine, you know, in the guru form, when that's going to, you know, be made use of. You don't know. But, you know, we just happen to be the guinea pigs who were in the room, and got, at least it did, those words did, you know, come to the ears, and they may not have gone past that in many cases, or not often, because it's a rare fucking thing.
Yes, it is.
Transformation of a, you know, of a human being who's, you know, not prepared for this, and get, and somehow another gets, you know, blessed and graced to, for the divine intervention, you know, yeah, there are some miraculous and beautiful stories associated with that, over and over and over and over again, and that's usually, you know, because of the gifts, you know, you're somehow or another, you allow some of the gifts, or you're in a, in such a vulnerable position because of what the guru's doing, that you can receive something in a moment and not just, you know, be that that other pattern of the closed fist.
Right.
So yeah, that, I mean, that's why I think it is just wonderful that myself and any devotee who's come in contact with Beloved can start speaking of what, you know, what the process is, you know, in, and how it looks in their case, because the more you do it, the more you see how, you know, all-encompassing it truly really is, and that's a good, you know, that's a really good confession, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I'm blown away, and you know, it's not something, you know, that I don't think anybody can just like hear or listen to and just, you know, but I think they can feel that, because that's how I received many of my gifts from Beloved. Is what wasn't through necessarily the words, you know, even though they were associated with it, but there were times when that actual communication that was coming kind of directly into the heart, and my mind may not have comprehended most of it, but my heart did, and therefore I could still fully respond. You know, in what I term miraculous moments. And so, yeah. And I kind of feel like this period of time that we're in right now, where you and I and Stanley and I and Rachel and I and others can discuss the more bigger picture of this process with the guru. And it's just... it's almost like another step in the guru's work. It's almost like another part of the secret of how the guru devotee process works. And
well,
unfolds.
It surely doesn't end just because he's left the body.
Oh boy, no. Hello, that's an understatement. Jeez, Maniz Managa. It's actually the opposite. You could say the opposite.
Well, the demand
not only ends,
more...
but it's almost like the limitation of the human body is no longer there, and so the divine, as the guru, and yet, you know, all encompassing rather than just in the presumed form of the human body guru. So yeah, it's the same one, only bigger, but because of the gift of the human God-man guru, because of that, the rest of it is able to be felt and perceived. And therefore, it just makes this whole story about the guru, and here we're talking about Adidas Amraj, Baba Free John, Franklin Jones, but really, we also know that we're talking about the divine itself. And how amazing that it is actually felt in a personal way, in an intimate way, in a kind of in love way. You know, it's just a fucking unbelievable, not a story. It's what the history of the divine is. You know, it's even said in many different traditions, like the Krishna-Radha relationship. And you know what I mean? It's, you know, seeing the divine in manifest form and you intimately, you know, part of that, not separate from it. So I think that's the real secret of this gift is, you know, so I can tell the ugly parts of the story, but regardless of that, this also was given the special, you know,
personal human connection to the body on the land, in the earth.
And yet unseparate, non-separate, one with the divine. So those two things are almost like opposites.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you said, he was...
I think that's the koan.
Well,
that's the actual koan that at some point has to be accepted by every single so-called one.
It doesn't have to be accepted, it has to be understood.
Well, once it's understood, then that you live differently, trust me. And you probably stop asking some of the questions.
Well, that's true.
You're too busy doing something else.
Well, if you do have questions, they're informed through that understanding. So questions, whatever they are just questions.
And I'll tell you also, Ed, there's just a lot more, there's a lot more joy, a lot more humor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's very important because it's getting into the real part of the lila, the lessons, the what you have started this conversation with was the rejection, which the, you know, your sense that you were continually being shown the betrayal of the core of that egoic persona. That will, you know, you took coming in here and you still have playing in the background like a 1960s Moody Blues record that sometimes you buy it. And there are circumstances that reinforce it and show that it does actually exist, that you are rejected by the world. You are rejected by the guru. You are rejected by your mother. You are rejected by your father. And still you're required to respond. As a devotee.
And don't forget that the, you know, that one line that the guru said, oh, you've been rejected and you love it. You've been a victim and you love it. You love it so much that you even chose to be born into this specific situation so that you could be so justified.
Right.
So when you get to that level, you know, you realize, oh, you know, the you that he's talking about certainly goes beyond anything that you could, you know, that you could use as evidence.
It goes beyond the commercials of who Adida is and what the process is about. That's for darn sure.